Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's speaker will be Brad Ashford, newly elected congressman from Nebraska's 2nd District. Ashford is the first Democrat elected to serve in the 2nd District in 15 years, having defeated Congressman Lee Terry in the November general election. He'll talk about his first 90 days in office, the challenges he has faced, and what the future holds. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, April 8, 2015, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Kay Criss, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Our speaker today is the Honorable Congressman Brad Ashford, and his topic is his first months in office. Nebraska Congressman Brad Ashford won a hotly contested election last fall and became the first Democrat elected to serve in the 2nd District in 15 years. He will discuss what challenges he has faced and what the future holds. Congressman Ashford campaigned to bring both sides of Congress together. Has he been able to meet that challenge and create compromise? Have and will you, Congressman, make a difference? Will party politics continue to flavor our national government? And what do you see now as your biggest challenge? Please join me in giving an Omaha Press Club welcome to the Honorable Congressman Brad Ashford.
What a thrill. Thank you very much. What a great thrill. My wife, Ann, thank you for coming. She told me at the last minute she was going to be here, so I appreciate that very much. She's a very busy woman, as are all of you. So thank you all for coming. This is great. I've been in public life since 1984, I guess, and this last press club ball was the first time they did a skit about me. And I used to bother Fogarty about that, and I'm not sure he was involved in this decision, but I actually got a skit this time. So maybe it's because Fogarty was gone. But any event. I would like to talk about my, I guess, first 90 days in office. It has been something else. The question is always asked of me: Is Washington a mess? You know, or is there a mess in Washington, or some other way of asking the question? And of course, the answer that everybody gives on the talk shows is yes, it's a terrible mess, it's awful, and then they stop talking about it. And I'm here to tell you there's a mess in Washington. But there is a mess in Washington. But I will tell you, and I want to tell you at the outset, that I believe sincerely that there's a way forward. I believe that there's a way forward. And I'm going to talk to you a little bit about that. But first of all, let me lay this groundwork with you. I do think representative democracy is at risk in this country. I don't think there's any question about it at the congressional level. We either do too little, we pass the Affordable Care Act without any debate, we either do too little, like Dodd-Frank, we don't have a thorough debate about Dodd-Frank and the impact it has on banks in Nebraska, or we do way, way, way too little, and we don't do anything about immigration reform. We don't even debate it. We don't debate immigration reform. It's been on the agenda for 12 years, and we don't debate it. We don't talk about reforming taxes. We don't debate reforming taxes, even though we all know, everyone in this room knows, you have to reform the tax code. Everyone knows that, but we don't debate it. So we maybe do too much without deliberation by passing the Affordable Care Act without a thorough debate, and we do too little by not even addressing things like immigration reform, which has a direct impact on our state. So what is the Nebraska experience? What has Nebraska brought to the United States Congress? A lot. A lot. Not only do we have an exceptional delegation in Washington today, my friends that I work with in the Nebraska delegation are exceptional. I've served with Deb Fischer. She's our U.S. Senator, obviously, and I work with all of them. But going back a long time ago to 1908, to be exact. George Norris was a congressman from McCook. In those days, we had five members of Congress. And George was one of them. And Speaker Cannon was the Speaker of the House. And George Norris, I bet in a place just like this, somewhere out in rural Nebraska, George, what are you going to do about that Speaker Cannon guy? You know? Well, George says, we're going to reform the Congress. After 4 years as a member of Congress, he went back to Congress, and they took Leader Cannon, Speaker Cannon, to task and reformed the United States Congress. And in 1934, George Norris, then a United States Senator, comes back to Nebraska and says, well, I've done Washington. Now we're going to do Nebraska. And we get the unicameral legislature. We get the nonpartisan unicameral legislature, the most unique governing body in the country. We need to spread the word in Washington about how we govern in this state. I've been on the floor of the Congress many times, and on occasion there are people in the room. Now, I have to ask them to come, and sometimes they'll just wander in. But if it's, you know, if it's right after a morning session, there may be some people linger along. And I talked to them about the unicameral. They said, Brad, will you stop talking about the unicameral? We're not going to ever have a unicameral legislature. I said, well, that may be so, but there are some lessons in what we do in Lincoln every day and what we have done in Lincoln and the kind of way we govern in Nebraska. We should be very, very proud of what we do in this state and who we are and the values that we have and the values that we bring to Washington through the elected representatives who have served this state and this district since the beginning. So there is hope that they're going to listen to us. They're going to listen to me. They're going to start adopting ways to deliberate so that the Affordable Care Act, instead of debating whether or not the Affordable Care Act was read by anybody, we ought to debate the Affordable Care Act. We ought to have debated the Affordable Care Act for at least 5 minutes before it passed. It's not 100% great, but we didn't debate it, and there lies the problem. The problem, as I see it in Washington, is not so much the issues. There's always going to be an issue to address. The problem in Washington is that we don't debate, discuss, and advise on the issues of our time. And by not so doing, I don't know when this all happened, when this evolved, since I've only been in Congress for 90 days. It came before me. I can guarantee you that. So what is my biggest fear going forward? We are an entrepreneurial state. We are a state of farmers and ranchers. We are a state that brought my family to Nebraska in the 1850s, from Ireland in the 1870s, from Sweden, to have hope, to get a job, to start a business. That's who we are. That's who we are in our essence. That's what makes Nebraska great, and that's what makes all of us come together and talk about the issues in the unicameral and in this room and in neighborhoods throughout the city and the state. But my biggest fear, as I look back in my lifetime, John Kennedy, when he was elected president, said, look, we're going to go to the moon. Okay, let's just do that. So he said, we're going to go to the moon. But what he was really saying, in my view, to the Congress, when he asked for the money to go to the moon, that must have been a heck of a discussion. But anyway, we're going to go to the moon. What he was saying was we're going to unleash the entrepreneurial spirit of our country like it's never been unleashed before. The first generation after World War II, the greatest generation by all accounts, my parents' generation, our parents' generation. John Kennedy unleashed the spirit of this nation, and it has to happen again. It must be renewed. It must be renewed. And that means government. You either are with the program or get off and get out of the way. One or the other. If you're going to stay with the program, debate issues, make decisions on tough issues, do the work of the people. That's why you're there. That's why I said I should take a 10% pay cut. Well, first of all, I said it because I got a pay raise from $12,000 to $175,000, and I could afford it. I could afford that pay cut. Senator, you know what I'm talking about. Now, he wrote a book. He wrote a book. His royalties are coming in over there, and so I read it. It was a good book. And it was all about values, by the way, and it was about Nebraska values and about how we should govern, how we do govern in the unicameral. It's a great book. What's my experience in Washington up till now? Well, the first couple days I was there, I forgot to go get my office. That was my first act. And, darn. So I finally got an office. It's a great office. It's on the first floor of the Cannon Building. I walk out the door across the street over to the 7 minutes. I'm sitting in the United States Capitol. Since for 45 years, I worked for Roman Oruska in 1969. And I would stand at the Russell Building and look down the mall and go, you know, it would be great to get one of these jobs. You know, senator, congressman, all those things. And it's only been 45 years. It doesn't look like it when you see me. But it's been 45 years since Lanny remembers when we started. But 45 years till we got here. Somewhat of a serpentine route, I could say. But 45 years. So what are my experiences now that I'm there? Well, the first one was you got to show up to get your office. The second experience, Ann was there this evening when we all got together, all the freshmen. There aren't many Democrat freshmen. That's why I advocate for no parties in Washington, because there are no Democrats hardly. There are a few, but there weren't too many Democrats in the freshman class. Very few. So we had a dinner the first night. We'd all gotten together, all the freshmen. This is exciting. We're all buddies. We just got elected to the United States Congress. So we're in the rotunda of the United States Congress, Statuary Hall. It is the most phenomenal place you could be. We sit down, and all of a sudden, I see Speaker Boehner walk down the aisle. He's walking down. There's the speaker. We're going to have this great dinner together. Well, and behind, they kind of go in a line, you know, when Speaker Boehner's first, and then the other 200 and so Republicans behind him. Actually, there weren't that many freshmen, but 60 freshmen Republicans walking right down the aisle to another room in another part of the Capitol. And I'm thinking, well, where are they going? Where are they going? Well, we didn't have dinner together. I said, why don't we eat together? No, you don't eat together. I said, well, okay. We don't eat together. So that was the second day. We don't eat together. And then we had a caucus, a Democrat caucus. And my good friend Nancy Pelosi, who I was on TV with every day when I ran for office, was in charge. We're great friends. Anyway, so Nancy was leading the caucus. And we got up into those horrible Republicans, look what they're going to do next. I go, Jesus, we've just got here, these horrible Republicans. What are they going to do? And then a laundry list of the horrible things that they were going to end up doing as soon as we left that room. So I did leave the room, and I walked outside, and these reporters, they asked, we want to talk to a freshman, and we see this freshman is sort of older, may have some degree of wisdom. We'll ask him what he thought about the caucus. I said, I've never been to a caucus. I'm from Nebraska. We don't have caucuses in our legislature. So the first caucus meeting was my first caucus. And I liken the partisanship, and I'm not going to delve into it in great depth. We all read about it. It's talked about on television. It exists. It exists. There are 435 members of Congress. They are super people. I haven't met one person on either side of the aisle I didn't like. That's our nature here, of course, unfortunately. We like everybody. So I liked everybody in the room, in the place. But, you know, it is, it is a different place. And they asked me that we don't have caucuses. We don't even have an aisle. We don't have parties. Well, how do you function? How do you live there? I said, I know it's very difficult, and someone should write a book about it. But Alan Tubach ought to do a painting or something. But anyway, that was my experience. I liken it to a boxing match. You know, you get into your corner, and you get all revved up, and you go out and you box for maybe 15 rounds. At the end of 15 rounds, it's a draw. You've done absolutely nothing. You go back to your corner, you get revved up again. That's what it's like. And the people are competent, and they're good people. The system needs to change. The system needs to change. I had the temerity to introduce a bill. I finally couldn't take it anymore. I said, I'm going to introduce a bill. And I'm going to introduce a bill that says that you cannot pass a bill in the United States Congress until there's 10 hours of debate. And I took it to my good friend, Leader Steny Hoyer, who's a wonderful member, obviously a leader in the United States Congress from Maryland, been there for 28 years, the second leading ranking Democrat. I said, Steny, I've got this. We could debate 10 hours. Oh, I don't think that's going to go. I said, well, what if we did five? That's not going to go either. So anyway, the bill's in the hopper. We put our bills in the hopper, and they stay there for a while until they percolate to the top. But we are doing things, thanks to our staff. I think where's Amanda McGill? We are so fortunate to have Amanda McGill, Senator McGill, and you all probably know, or most of you know Amanda. She served with me for 8 years in the legislature, one of the youngest female members, if not the youngest, ever elected to the unicameral. Candidate for state auditor. I hate to see the books without you there. But anyway, she's great, and we're so fortunate to have her. An expert on so many issues. But we are doing things. We are doing things. But we're going to do things that matter. We're not just going to do top-line political stuff. We're going to do things that matter. So the veterans are a big issue. So the hospital went from 18th to 10th on the list. Brad, you did it! No, I didn't. I didn't do it. It did go from 18th to 10th. And it wasn't because I represent this district. It went from 18th to 10th. It's still 10th. It's still 10th. We don't have a new hospital. I'm not going to rest until we get a new hospital. Getting from 18th to 10th is like the Nebraska football team. You know? Oh, my God, we were 15th this year. You know? So, but we have done some great things for veterans. We're working hard on a clinic for veterans for this community. A big clinic, 200,000 square feet clinic. Foot clinic, because 85% of veterans are outpatients. They need mental health services. Women have special needs. 16% of our force is now women. They have special needs that are not being addressed in the facilities we have here today. So we're on the road to getting that done. VA, the VA administrator, the secretary, of the VA is going to be out here in a few weeks to talk about his plan to get something like that done for our community. That's good work. But that's not me. That's the entire delegation working together, Republicans and Democrats, working with my good friend Tim Walls, who's a congressman from Mankato. He's one of my 25 friends. Tim Walls from Mankato, Minnesota, who was born in West Point, Nebraska, actually came from Butte County. Tim Walls is the longest-serving veteran in the United States Congress, 28 years. So he's working with me. We're working together to get that clinic done for Omaha. For the 2nd Congressional District. I serve on the Armed Services Committee. What an amazing experience. I spent 8 days in the Middle East. I met with President Ghani. I walk in to President Ghani's office. I said, President Ghani, nice to meet you. He goes, Brad Ashford, let's see, you're from Omaha, Nebraska, correct? I said, I am from Omaha, Nebraska. You noticed. He said, how's Tom Gutierrez doing? So that's within 30 seconds of walking into President Ghani's office. We talked to King Abdullah of Jordan. We talked to the President of Iraq. I'm on the Emerging Threats Subcommittee. We're working every day on the ISIS situation, on Yemen, to try to develop not only a way to eradicate and destroy these people, but what comes next? What is the phase 4 that we didn't do in Iraq? What is the phase 4? Well, it's some obvious things. We need economic improvement in the Middle East. We need women to have a place in society in the Middle East. King Abdullah talked to us about that. President Ghani talked to us about that. A new pan-Arab movement that can get along someday with Israel, that we can make peace and move forward. The first week of my tenure, we had an opportunity to talk to, and I always get her name wrong, but I'm going to say President Johnson Sirleaf, the president of Liberia. And she was on Skype, and she was talking to us. And you know what she said? I want to thank the people at the University of Nebraska Medical Center for helping to save my country. Now, how would you like to be sitting in the – sorry, radio audience. How would you like to be sitting in the Congress of the United States with your colleagues from all over the country, and the president of Liberia thanks you because of what your state did to help the people of Liberia and save lives, thousands of lives. And now we're working with the Med Center to make the Ebola Center at UNMC a national training center. It's going to happen. We're going to get it done. We're going to get it done. I just spent the morning with the trade ambassador, Ambassador Froman, who has came to visit us. I asked him last week, I said, Ambassador, you got to get out here and talk about this Trans-Pacific Partnership. You got to talk about free trade. So we went out and we visited a farm. And we met with the farm leaders this morning. We met with the labor leaders. And we talked about what's really happening with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The fact that for every $1 billion of exports that we export from this country, that it creates 5,000 to 7,000 new jobs, that 40,000 jobs in this state are directly related to export of agricultural products in this state, that under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if it's negotiated correctly and the labor standards and the environmental standards are written in like they're going to be, and we reduce the tariffs in the Pacific nations from Peru to Chile to Australia to New Zealand to Japan to Korea, South Korea, with no tariffs, they're now our beef that we sell to Japan has a 38% tariff. Under the Trans-Pacific Partnership, that tariff's going to go down to practically nothing. We're going to triple our beef exports from Nebraska to Asia. Now, we've got to be careful. We've got to make sure that the labor standards are there. If we're going to trade with Vietnam, we've got to make sure not only are the tariffs down to practically nothing, but that the practices, the trade practices, are up to speed and that the food safety issues are addressed. And we're on that road to getting that done. And Ambassador Froman spent the morning with us. He spent the morning with us. He flew in. He's flying out. But he wanted to come here. He wanted to connect with Nebraskans. So we've done that. And we're going to work towards a vote on that bill sometime in the latter part of April. The Import-Export Bank. The Import-Export Bank is on the block. It could be gone by the middle of June. There are hundreds and hundreds of jobs in Nebraska that rely upon the Import-Export Bank. We have the largest exporter of popcorn in the world in York, Nebraska. And the Import-Export Bank provides the financing for that business to export its popcorn around the world. So the head of the Import-Export Bank is coming in 2 or 3 weeks to talk to the business community, to talk to people in this community at my invitation, to have these roundtable discussions. Say, well, I'm coming out there, Brad. We need to preserve the Import-Export Bank. And we do. It's best for Nebraska. So where are we going? Where are we going in the Middle East? Israel is our most sacred partner. Israel is our most sacred partner. We are at a place in our negotiations with Iran where we have not been for a long time, but we have to be careful. We have to be careful. We don't know what's coming until we see the agreement at the end of June, but I am concerned about it. I am concerned about it because if you're sitting in Israel and you are the enemy of Iran to the point where your destruction as a country is the number one priority of the other country, you got some things to think about. So we're going to wait and see. Congressional oversight's not a bad thing. Senator Croker and Senator Schumer aren't all wrong. We need to look at this thing carefully, and we're going to be deciding that in the next few weeks. next few months. The Defense Authorization Act. We're going to be marking up that bill next week. The military need the resources that we must give them in order to finish the job in the Middle East and around the world. So what are my priorities as I look forward into the future, which in my future is about 30 days, considering I've been here for 90 days. Number one is we need to create new and better jobs with a robust private sector. Everybody talks about jobs. Everybody talks about jobs. That's Steny Hoyer gives a great quote. He said, you know, Democrats are for workers. Yay. You know, we're for workers, but you know what else? We Democrats are for workers, but we need to have employers that hire people in order to have workers. And he's right. He's right. The employers that make a difference in this economy are the private employers, the entrepreneurs, the people who start businesses. Since the recession, prior to the recession, we gained around 100,000 startup companies a year in our economy. We now lose 100,000 a year. That's not acceptable. We need to get government off the backs of business where it can be done prudently. And we need to focus on that, and I'm supporting measures to do that. We need an education bill. We need an education bill. We need a reauthorization of the Education Act. We need to get that done now, which gives to local school districts the ability to do what they do is educate their kids in the way they see fit. And we need to get that done. We need a foreign policy. We need a foreign policy that protects us, protects not only our borders but our global interests. But we also need a foreign policy that enlarges our markets, that creates global markets. You know, we talk about the budget or the trade deficit. The reason we have a trade deficit is we trade with China. Every country that we have a trade agreement with, we have a surplus in our trade with those countries. We have a surplus, billions and billions of dollars of surplus. The products, the manufactured products that we send out, the technology especially, the ag products. So we need to have a global reach, and that means having a military presence to some degree and in Asia to confront Russia, to make the kind of arrangements with Europe that are going to be necessary to protect the interests of the United States and of Europe. We need comprehensive immigration reform. There was a bill passed by the Senate, bipartisan Republicans and Democrats, just 4 or 5 months ago. But it didn't get to the Senate, to the House. It didn't get there because it was too hot. It was too hot. What do people care about getting reelected that badly for? You know, getting reelected should not be the reason why you're there. And that's the problem with Washington in its essence. It's the money and it's the desire to get reelected. That cannot be what drives us anymore in Congress. I'm not for term limits, but if this doesn't change, maybe that's the only answer we've got. I'm not for term limits. We should be able to elect who we want to elect. It wasn't a good idea for the unicameral. It's not a good idea for Congress. But I'll tell you, if things don't change, we're going to need to do something. We need an energy policy that leads to independence by developing new cost-effective energy sources and promotes energy efficiency. We had a bill on energy efficiency that didn't pass. So these are some of the things that should I look at my watch? There are hand signals by Fogarty. I didn't know. I know I missed a point in the first part of the speech. I apologize. I didn't run it past him. But the biggest thing we need to do is change the culture in Washington. You know, I'm a member of a group called No Labels. There's 75 of us. We're Republicans and Democrats. We work together on policy. How are we going to grow the economy? We got to stop the gerrymandering. I've co-signed several bills with my good friend, Congressman Jim Cooper, who's my age, actually younger, and has been in Congress for 30 years from Nashville. He said, I'm a Democrat. Can you believe I've been elected that many times? Why do you think I got elected that many times? I said, Jim, I have no idea how you got elected that many times. He said, because it's the birthplace of Andrew Jackson. They always vote for Democrats. Well, that's a good reason. But he's got a bill on gerrymandering. that there needs to be the kind of process in place so we don't gerrymander these districts. People say, Brad, how can you live in Omaha? It's a close district. You might lose the next race. I said, well, I'm not going to predict that. But the good thing about our district is that it is close. It isn't gerrymandered. But there are, except for 30 districts in this country, they are all gerrymandered. You win the primary, you don't have to worry about the general election. If you're a conservative Republican in a conservative district, or if you're a liberal Democrat, then you don't have to worry about the general election. So we need to stop that. In summary, let me just say this. What is the lesson that I learned from my 16 years in the unicameral, the lesson that I want to most clearly send to my colleagues in the Congress? 70% is good enough. 70% of immigration reform is good enough for to start. 70% of tax reform is good enough. 70% of trade policy is good enough. Zero doesn't cut it. Our citizens deserve at least 70, and that isn't much to ask. 70% of a solution is not 100%, but it's not zero. And that's how we worked in Lincoln. We always made somebody unhappy in Lincoln, sometimes more than others. We always made people unhappy, but it was usually only 30% once we passed something. And I always say to my colleagues, you know what's great about passing a bill? We passed a bill on the doctor fix last week. 380 people voted for this. Because for 16 years, doctors were not being reimbursed for their Medicare, and they were walking out of the program. We finally passed a bill. We passed a bill, and I looked at everybody, and they were so happy and jovial. And did you see what we did? And I said, yes. I said, this can happen to you every day. Every day, if you just take this example, that we can pass a bill and it can be 70% of what you want, you can walk out of that. Instead of shutting the government down and running down the steps of the Capitol, that famous picture from last year where all the members of Congress were running down the steps of the Capitol to get out of town because they had just shut the government down. Maybe that's a happy occasion. I don't know. But it would seem to me that it's a lot happier if you're running down the steps of that Capitol having passed something that's meaningful to the citizens of this country and to Nebraska. Let me just say this. I am so deeply honored to be your representative. It's a lifelong dream of mine, a family that's been here before the state was created. To be able to do this is beyond measure the greatest honor of my life. Thank you very much.
Don't go too far away. We have lots of great questions here, and thank you so much. You did cover a lot, but a lot of people have a lot on their mind, and there were a number of questions that people are asking about the Affordable Care Act. Like so many in Washington, why not make adjustments on it? What do you do with people that are already have insurance through the program? Can you help save Obamacare? Do you want to?
The Affordable Care Act isn't going anywhere soon. But let me tell you, well, in my case, I voted several times not to repeal the Affordable Care Act, both in the budget and various other bills that were introduced. My good friends on the other side of the aisle, who I agree with a lot of the times, not on this. Repealing the Affordable Care Act without some other plan that meets the needs of the people that are now covered under the exchanges is a massive mistake. Having said that, what we didn't do, because we didn't debate it, we didn't debate the Affordable Care Act. It came to the Congress in what's called a closed rule. There's no debate. There's no debate. This is changing the whole healthcare system in the country. So we need to address costs. And there are some cost measures in the Affordable Care Act that are making a difference. Healthcare costs. When I first was in the legislature in the 80s, our healthcare costs for Medicaid were going up at 14%. That's not the case in healthcare today, whether it's because of the recession or whatever it is. There is a slowing of healthcare costs. That's important. That's good. We need to spend our time thinking about that. I think the exchanges are fine. But I don't like the mandates because, and I've always, when I was running, and as I believe today, I don't like the mandates. I think we can get to the same place using the tax code through credits as opposed to mandates. But again, that's something that has to be debated. But throwing this thing out and the thousands of people that now have coverage and people my age, quite frankly, who couldn't get, well, I'm in Medicare now, I guess. I don't have it, but I could, is that... they had problems, diabetes and other conditions they've had throughout their lives and could never get coverage, and they now have it. That's important. That's important to quality of life. It does affect payments for drugs, for pharmaceuticals. But the Medicare system is – Social Security we can fix. Social Security we can fix by changing, as we did in 1987. We could change that again to make it go into the future as long as we want it to go. That's not the case with Medicare. Because with Medicare, we are dependent upon inputs, costs that we don't have as much control over as we certainly do with the pension plan. So those are the challenges. Medicare is the challenge. Medicare is the challenge. And it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of discussion, a lot of debate, but throwing the exchanges out is not a good idea.
A lot of people are worried about your social life, Congressman. How are you coming on making 25 friends in Congress? And does that have anything to do with compromise? There's lots of questions about how will you reach compromise, and they seem to think your social life might have something to do with it. I don't know.
I promised the – well, first of all, 25 friends isn't going to cut it, I've discovered. That we got to go higher. We got to go bigger. I promised my friends of – I have numbers of friends. Of course, I'm not going to tell you who they are because I promised I wouldn't. And I don't want to ruin their careers. But I'll tell you, we have lots of occasion in these bipartisan groups, the No Labels group, a couple of other groups I'm in. But my trip to the Middle East, the four of us, you know, Joe, you're a liar, Wilson, was one of the four. Now, Joe Wilson is from South Carolina, and he's a very conservative Republican, and he should never have said what he said about the president during the State of the Union address. And he told me, I should never have said it. It was a terrible day. I said, Joe, it didn't go over very well. And he said, but they loved it in North Charleston. And I said, Joe, it doesn't matter whether they loved it in Charleston. They didn't really like it anywhere else. He's a good guy. He's fighting for the defense budget. He's fighting to make sure, as the chair of the Emerging Threats Subcommittee, that we have that we break the sequester for the military, that we give them the resources they need. So we're finding the friends and. You know, we'll just keep plugging away at it. And how's my social life? I live next to the Verizon Center, so I go to Wizards games when I can find the money. But I do other things, I guess. I jog every day. I'm still running. Okay, I've only found three people to go with me, though.
And I heard you were going to run after you get out of here. Speaking of running, what are your thoughts on continuous campaigning? After 90 days, you already have an opponent. Can you ever get off the campaign trail?
Who's my opponent? No. they have this deal. Both parties send their members to these rooms where they make telephone calls for money. And I won't go there. I won't go to those rooms. They say, you got to go to this room. I'm 65. I'm not going to the room. I'm not going to the room to make calls. My theory, we have a great team helping us raise money. We're going to be competitive. We're going to run again. We're going to continue to do what we do. But you know what? Nebraska, we will be victorious if we do a good job. And if we can connect with the voters here, if we can bring the message, as my friend Tom Monahan always says, you know, your job's two things. Take the message from Nebraska back to Congress and then take the message from Congress back here. The first message is the easier one. The other one is trying to tell people in Nebraska what you're doing in Washington. I accept that. But I think you have to connect, and you have to be working, and you have to make things happen. I think having the ambassador here today was pretty good after 90 days. And getting the veterans administrator here and the secretary here. I mean, we're going to keep digging at these issues till we get them solved. And then the voters will have to decide. Okay.
Any thoughts about the Voting Rights Act? Any chance of your support for bringing it back?
Yeah, I'm for bringing it back and having a debate. I think whether or not Alabama or Texas, those cases have been litigated and they've been decided. I think the Voting Rights Act, you know, after we pass things that are important every 30 years. Every 30 or 40 years, we pass something that actually does something. And then we just sort of let it lie for a while, like we did the Voting Rights Act. And like we, quite frankly, have done with Medicare, passed in 1965. Not a whole lot has been done to change it. So Social Security is 1934. So we pass these big things every 30 years or so, and they, oh, my God, we passed this wonderful thing. And then we don't do much with it. I think revisiting things like the Voting Rights Act ought to be done by Congress, not the courts necessarily, and not by the regulators. It ought to be done not necessarily by the Attorney General. It ought to be us. Why do we not talk about things? It's fun. We should debate it. We should have conversations about it.
Yeah, I'm getting.
Well, I'm going to ask this one just because I have a family member that's facing this, and I'm sure many of us do in the room. How are you working to lessen the blow of student debt and recent college graduates?
We have it in our family. You all, I'm sure, have similar issues in your families. There's another example of the federal government got involved in the college tuition business beyond the Pell Grants a long time ago. And that incented banks to give loans, and it incented, to some extent, colleges and universities to raise tuition. It fed upon itself. You know, a bank will loan the money if there's somebody guaranteeing that the money's going to be paid back. So it needs to be revisited. This is another huge issue. Over $1 trillion in debt, the largest debt by a single sector of the economy in our economy is student debt, bigger than auto loans. So here's another example of something that we started the old cart down the road, and you know, everything was going fine. You could get a student loan when it was $5,000 to go to college. That's one thing. But when it's $100,000, that's a totally different matter. And what's happened is people who had loans before are treated differently than those who have loans in the future. And the whole thing is just, you know, and it's all a political. Republicans have one view, Democrats the other. These are non-political issues. These are issues that need to be resolved on economic terms, and we need to relieve our kids of some of that debt, no question, in some responsible way. They have to realize they have a debt, but it has to be responsibly paid back in a way that they can make ends meet.
There's been a lot in the news lately about our infrastructure, and how can we get a handle on crumbling infrastructure in our nation?
I didn't mention infrastructure, actually. That is, the three things that probably are going to get done, may get done, possibly could get done this year, infrastructure is one of them. And the reauthorization of the Highway Trust Fund is not going to necessarily do it. There isn't enough money in the. I used to work for the Federal Highway Administration for Governor Thiemann when there was enough money in the Highway Trust Fund. But there isn't now. There isn't now. Just like there isn't enough money in the Social Security Disability Fund. There's, you know, it's broken. So we're going to have to come to grips with that, and we're going to have to come up with a solution. Are we going to raise the gas tax by 1 cent? The proposal is to raise the gas tax from 17.8 cents to 18.8 cents, whatever it is, because gas prices are so low. Well, I'll tell you, we're going to have to do something. We're going to have to do something, and I have not seen anything out there that makes any sense or that can get done other than taking a look at that issue, at the gas tax issue. Because if we don't, we're going to have more accidents. We're going to have more bridges falling down. We're going to have less people working. And the best jobs bill for good jobs is building roads and bridges. And that brings me to a topic. We need to get our kids in 9th and 10th grade to be able to, if they want to go into the vocations instead of going to college, they ought to be given an opportunity to do that. And we ought to encourage that. And we ought to encourage it when they're in the ninth or tenth grade. And that because if they become welders, they become construction workers with talent, they're going to make a lot of money and they're going to be able to support their families. That's what good jobs are in this economy.
Is there anything you can do as congressman to prevent toxic fracking water from being dumped in our state?
Pass a law, I guess. You know, I think this. Pass a law. I have not seen a proposal in the legislature. Could certainly pass such a law. I have not seen a proposal on the federal level to stop fracking. Well, we don't frack here, but to stop water from seeping into our groundwater from North Dakota. I haven't seen such a proposal, but obviously you can pass a law to say you can't do it. So it's possible.
There are also a lot of questions, and you dealt with it earlier when you were speaking about Iran and the Iran deal on nuclear weapons. Also, this kind of goes with that. What is our best, worst option in dealing with ISIL?
ISIL is everywhere, and the ISIL affiliates are everywhere. They're in Lebanon. They're on the Israeli border in the Golan. They are in, obviously, Syria. They're in Iraq. They're playing around in Yemen, not under the ISIL name, but some other name. They are in Africa. Boko Haram is an ISIL affiliate in Al-Qaeda. These are Sunni Arabs. These are Sunni Arabs, the leaders of whom had worked for Saddam Hussein. And when I'm not excusing, these are the worst people on earth, in my view, and they ought to be destroyed. But that's where they came from, the leaders. And now they have a social network through the internet that is making this globe extremely more dangerous place to be because of them. So, number one, we need to destroy, deplete ISIL. And we're into Crete. That one of the ironies of this Middle East mess is that really we're relying on the Iranians on the ground, the Shia militia, to complete the job into Crete. Then, as they move up to Mosul, they're going to play a role there. Obviously, Iraq and Iran have a border. There are all sorts of entanglements going on here between the Shia and the Sunni. This is a dispute going back to the 7th century. And they're not. I don't see any immediate opportunity for that to be alleviated. But ISIL, the difference, and we all know, they've tried to establish a caliphate, a landmass. They've tried to create a country in Syria and Iraq because there was a vacuum there because of the Assad regime in Syria and because of the Americans leaving Iraq prematurely, in my opinion. So basically, there was a vacuum. They came in. They're creating a country. And so we have to get them out of there. But that doesn't mean they're going to go away. They're not going to go away. So they're going to pop up some other place. And it's part of our global strategy going forward is how we're going to deal with terrorism of that grade. And it's high-grade terrorism. So
we have one final question for you. Should sequestration be ended?
Yes. You know, you don't budget that way. And you certainly don't. Okay, we have a $1.1 trillion discretionary budget. The rest of it's on autopilot. The rest of the $3.7 trillion budget is on autopilot. It's payment of interest, which we're paying at a very low interest rate, and of course, you know, the entitlements, Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security disability. The $1.1 trillion, and that's not the exact number, but it's darn close, it's a lot of money, is everything else. You know, $570 billion for the military. The military is cutting back its force, and at this point, that's not the right thing to do. There may be an opportunity in the future, but not now. We can't cut back the Air Force. We can't cut back the Army when we're engaged in the Middle East. We've got to get to the point where there's more safety and less danger before that happens. But sequestration is not the way to budget. It's a way of not facing the tough issues and voting on the tough issues. And the budget is the big deal. And we're going to be coming up in a I guess, several months before we get the actual budget document to sign or to vote on, we need to start making tough decisions in the budget that aren't just on automatic pilot. That's not the way we do business here, and that's not the way we should do business in Washington. Do I have to go now?
We want to thank you so much for your time today. We'd like to thank you for participating in today's forum. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's speaker has been Brad Ashford, newly elected congressman from Nebraska's 2nd District. Ashford is the first Democrat elected to serve in the 2nd District in 15 years, having defeated Congressman Lee Terry in the November general election. He talked about his first 90 days in office, the challenges he has faced, and what the future holds. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Wednesday afternoon, April 8, 2015, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, May 21st at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be former Nebraska State Senator Mike Flood. He'll talk about the Hispanic community and how important he believes it is to Nebraska. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 400 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.